Good morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHH New Haven's home for community radio. I'm Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. Babs Rawls Ivy has some days off. We're going to try to approximate some of the energy and insights she brings to the station every day. And we got a person who's been making New Haven tick during a century, once in a century pandemic that has upturned our whole lives. And she's working hard to keep us safe every day. Maritza Bond, Health Director, City of New Haven. Welcome back to WNHH.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, Paul.
All right. So, Maritza, I'm going to ask you to help keep our readers up to date. And just so people know, I'm more than 6 feet. There's nobody else around. Everyone's vaccinated, and we can do with that as you may. So, a lot going on with COVID. We're in a new era with Delta, as we said before we came on. Man, are we sick of this.
Yeah.
And Delta threw us a curveball because globally, 3% of Vietnam is vaccinated.
Exactly.
New variants are coming. And what I'd like to do at the end of our interview is about this subject on COVID, ask you what you think the future holds.
Okay.
But in the meantime, I'd like to talk about right now, because we're still trying to figure out every day what we make of this.
Yeah.
And the truth is, we're glad we have experts like you looking at what's happening, but nobody knows for sure what's really going on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's unfortunate. You know, we were making strides as a collective, as a state we are. We're one of the major states in the country vaccinating our residents, and I want to commend the residents for stepping up as a community, because we know it's about the community, as a community, for the community. It's sort of this approach that I've been taking in response to this pandemic, and so it's discouraging to see that now we have a new Delta variant, another variant that has entered our state, our country, and is so highly contagious. It's really high transmissible, meaning that it has a higher viral load. And unfortunately, we are seeing some vaccinated individuals that are having some breakthrough cases in conjunction with the majority of the cases, however, are unvaccinated individuals that are still, for whatever reasons, not quite there to get vaccinated.
You know, so 6 months ago, we thought we're vaccinated, we're done.
We're done. All right. We took our mask. We flipped them all off. And I think I did a little bit of that. Initially, where I was in outdoor social settings, and now the reality is that we have to take additional precautions.
And we still need that vaccine because it's believed to be the number one way to
absolutely
keep.
Absolutely.
Are we going to have a situation? Now, our hospitals are not overflowing now like in other states. We have caseloads back up, but they haven't closed down the other parts. People are still getting other treatment, and there's not a danger, right?
Well, the hospitals and I communicate often. You know, we are on cell phone basis at this time because we worked really closely in the beginning of the pandemic. The reality is that there are concerns about the significant number of individuals being hospitalized. Thankfully, it's not affecting the overall operations. People can still seek health care for other reasons and other medical surgeries. But the fact is that we are starting to see an increase of cases, and the majority of those cases are still those that are unvaccinated. And what we do know is that the vaccine provides protection from severe illness and potentially death. What I want to say is that although we are seeing breakthrough cases at the hospital, about 30% of those cases, what we do know is that we haven't had any fatalities in our city, and I'm so grateful for that.
You mean no fatalities at all with COVID lately?
Not with the COVID-19, correct, in our city. And I'm just very grateful.
You mean with not even unvaccinated?
Not even unvaccinated. So we are starting.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, so we are seeing. We haven't had any new fatalities.
Since when?
And I don't project. I have to look at the numbers.
Because I know we had some still people that hadn't been vaccinated a couple months ago.
Yeah, but I think in the last few weeks, we haven't. So I'll double check the dates.
So we have about, last check, 58 people in the hospital in New Haven?
Exactly. So those are New Haven residents specifically within our city, within the whole system as a county, because that's what CDC likes to categorize us as a county. When they determine the risk level of transmission, we have about 133 cases.
Does that include Waterbury?
Yes, it does. It includes Waterbury Falls within our region.
Yeah, okay. I always look at that number. So it's that, now, how does that compare to the other heights of the pandemic? How many people were in the hospital when it was at its worst before?
You know, I don't have my data in front of you.
But like ballpark, are we at the same level?
We are right now, our threshold, so this is the issue. We're definitely higher than we were last summer.
Well, that was the low point.
That was the low point, right? Because we were at a great
But other states are higher than ever. Florida, Louisiana,
right? So, yeah. And, I mean, when you're talking about Texas, Louisiana, Florida, they have the lowest, one of the lowest vaccination rates. Alabama, Georgia, those are the states of concern. And that's one of the things that we're battling, because we know that the vaccines work historically when we can eradicate a disease, when we reach herd immunity.
And we're not going to reach herd immunity.
Not as a country.
Because there'll always be other, the people don't want to get vaccinated. But can we keep our levels lower permanently, or does it eventually just, because it got here, right? We were vaccinated, but other states weren't, so it got here
this
in a big
way. This is the problem.
Way.
We are transmitting.
But can
population.
We still, by being 70% vaccinated, can we prevent the hospitals being overloaded and that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. And I think that's what's important. I think the message is that we know that we can potentially reduce severity of the disease. The efficacy rate of these vaccinations have proven that. And they are proven to be safe. And so, you know, as you know, Pfizer is also FDA approved, the vaccine for those that are 12 and over, which is even greater news. So those parents that have some hesitation around, because our lowest vaccination rates are technically around youth at this juncture. Mm-hmm. And so now we have an FDA approved vaccine. So it's really important for parents to now take into consideration getting their children.
And we'll
vaccinated.
Talk about that with hesitancy. I'm thinking about this number. So you mentioned at a press conference Friday, and we'll get to that too, that New Haven, we have these Yale scientists who track human waste in the sewage.
Oh, yes.
And that gives us an indication of how much COVID is out there that hasn't shown up yet.
Mm-hmm.
We've been wondering whether the United States was going to be like Britain and have basically a four-week surge of Delta and then it goes down, or would it be like some other places where it becomes a permanent months-long grind? What are we learning from the sewage? Are we near the peak or not?
Right now, the sewage is projecting that it's about 24 per 100,000, and we're seeing about 20 per 100,000. So it's really close in regards to the
testing
and the rate of cases. You know, the we are tracking it closely. What we do know is that the Delta variant is the dominant variant.
Oh, we know
cases,
that.
Right?
All I meant, Maritz, is do you think we're going to peak and then, like, because we all thought, okay, we're going to have a month of this where we're
crazy.
Yeah,
I feel like we are in a surge right now. It's community-wide spread, meaning it's not affecting one community neighborhood over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping, you know, and we are assessing the data, hoping that the first week of October we'll see it dwindling down.
Okay.
That's
so you think
we're projecting
so you think it's going to continue growing through September?
Yes, I am. I do have some reservations. We are concerned. We have, you know, we know that we are reopening schools, and there's going to be increased activity of indoor mm-hmm. as it gets colder and we enter the fall, and so the activities also of what I'm seeing, it's of a lot of indoor socializing happening now that the college students have entered mm-hmm. The universities. And so there are some variables that we have to take into account. That's sort of the dynamics of changing.
Okay, so the basis for you thinking we're not going to reach the peak till October, perhaps, is that the sewage is showing slight increases are on the way, because that's the first warning.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, just looking at trends, more people are going inside and the schools
correct.
Are open, so there will be some transmission.
So
do you think we'll get to a point where the hospitals are overrun, or do you think we got it under control?
I'm hoping right now there are some concerns. The hospitals have expressed some concerns around the load of that is taken on the hospitals, but they're still within the percentages of still being okay. But there are some concerns and reservations around, you know, the outdoor large gathering events that are happening throughout the city and throughout the county, as well as the increased in cases of especially our college age groups, younger mm-hmm. population, and indoor
socializing. Do they think will the hospitals be as full as they were before at our peak?
I don't think I hope we never get to that point again.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to be more cognizant. We know what mitigation strategies as a community reduces the risk. I'm very fortunate. I am grateful for the city of New Haven with sort of complying with the mask requirements. Wearing a mask is not going to hurt us. It's going to yield, along obviously with hand hygiene, is going to at least reduce the risk of any potential exposure. And I think if we know what works, we as a community need to step up and do that.
Maritza Bond is the health director of the city of New Haven. She took her job just as COVID-19 came to America at the beginning of 2020. And she and Little Delisle, the Community Service Administrator in New Haven, have really been heroes and steady hands at the controls. So we've struggled. And, you know, people, this idea that we can somehow figure out everything about a virus before we even know how it works, and as it continually changed. In truth, it's the public officials who just keep track of the data, make smart decisions, and then work hard to enforce them, which nobody does better than Ritzabon, that really will keep us safe and are keeping us safe. So along, and you're listening to that on Dateline New Haven, WNHH-FM, New Haven's home for community radio. Director Bond, on Friday, you and Dr. Delisle and Pat King, the Corp Counsel, and Mayor Justin Elker announced a new mandate.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a mandate. It's not a vaccine mandate. It's a vaccine. Oh, and look at
it
this.
It is a vaccine mandate.
Shelley Springbaugh says, Marissa Bond is an incredible leader.
I'm so grateful
for her work in New Haven. Thank you for listening, Shelley, and thanks for weighing in here on Dateline. So unlike the state mandate that the governor has for Board of Ed,
mm-hmm.
for all schools, which includes our school people.
Absolutely.
Unlike that exemption, you don't have to get the vaccine. You don't have to say I have a religious exemption. You don't have to say I have another one. And then I'll have a question coming up from Harry. As of the end of next month, it's going to take a whole month to put it in. We're going to have, that's government employees have to get the vaccine, or mm-hmm. they can say I don't want it. They have to get tested every week.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with that policy?
So, you know, one of the things, we collectively as a group, you know, you mentioned Dr. Delisle, Pat King, there was others, Human Resources Department. So it took really the entire team to look at the entire landscape of our workforce and thinking through how do we respect privacy and give people options. And so we wanted to make sure that we had the option of testing out as well as getting a vaccine so that we can make this a seamless process of transition.
So does that make it easier because we just have a crazy country where people say, I don't want to take vaccine, even though that could endanger someone else?
And then at least making sure that the safety of our workforce and the public we serve, weekly testing can at least allow us to still isolate and quarantine the individuals.
There'll still be people that doesn't show up yet, but it'll lessen it.
And it will lessen the burden, right?
And the question one of our readers had, which is really interesting, similar question Harry just posted. If the vaccine doesn't prevent you from getting Delta, it just helps you survive it well, which is a biggie, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want people dying, getting
mm-hmm.
really sick.
Mm-hmm.
How are the unvaccinated the cause of the spread? Like, why isn't everybody getting tested every week, even if they're vaccinated? Or are you still less likely to get it if you got a vaccine?
So one of the things that is important to point out is that that is a great question, by the way, Harry. And thank you for asking it. And thank you for the readers for asking great questions every time I join Paul, who's one of my favorite guys, actually. I love Paul. Such a good question, because what's important to know is that we have mitigation strategies in place. So universal mask compliance is mandatory. So making sure that you're wearing a mask, also safe workplace measures are in place, meaning that you have to have your office structure set up in a way that...
Now, if you're alone in an office like I am today, you don't need the mask,
you
right?
You do not need the mask when you're alone. We also have reduced face-to-face meetings. So there are all these different... And cleaning... additional maintenance of the offices and during doorknobs during the day. So we have all this mitigation strategies in place. And the reality is it is very costly to do this test because we're self-insured as a municipality.
Okay.
And so testing right now, we're suggesting for those that are unvaccinated. However, we will continue to monitor that. And if we need to revisit the mandate, we will. As an executive order.
Are you less likely to even get it? We've heard differences on this because they say the viral load starts, it hits a big viral load, it hits you in your respiratory system up through your nose and mouth. And in fact, the vaccine doesn't affect you up there. It kind of kills it when it starts going down.
Exactly.
I don't say this very scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
So are you at all protected anymore from getting it in the first place if you're vaccinated?
If you're vaccinated, what we do know is that if you're around... It's to just think of an individual that's fully protected, right? So that you have your two doses, you exceeded the 14 days, and then it really matters about who you are engaging with. If the larger number of your households are vaccinated, you are in a safe zone per se.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're finding often is that individuals that are vaccinated are entering into spaces, especially social settings, where you're outnumbered by the unvaccinated individuals.
So the question
is when you cause concern.
But the question is, when you're thinking about why not just test everybody, you said it because it's so expensive. So the mm-hmm. Are you still more likely to get it if you're unvaccinated because you tend to be more around
it's
unvaccinated?
It's significantly higher to get COVID for unvaccinated individuals.
And why is that? Because I thought that wasn't clear, the science on that.
So individuals that are unvaccinated have no type of protection. So the vaccine the vaccine offers a range of efficacy of protection and also reduces the severity of severe illness.
Well, we all know about the
risk
and the severity,
right?
But you're also less likely to get COVID?
To get COVID, correct.
If you have vaccine.
If you're vaccinated, right? And so those that are unvaccinated are more likely, they're susceptible to getting COVID because they have no level of protection at all. Other than their own immune system. And depending on their immune system level, can cause severity.
And is there also an incentive idea that you want people to get the vaccine if they work for the city? So they'll know they won't have to bother with weekly tests if you have to kind of triage with the court?
Yeah, you know, We are going to offer weekly testing as an option, but we'll see how many employees will really want to, you know, have a swab up their nose every week. But we thought at least this offers them an option initially.
Okay. Robert, thank you for listening. Asks, how do we know New Haven schools are safe to open? They open today, by the way.
Oh,
especially
how do we know,
young kids aren't vaccinated. Yep. There are 180,000 cases of COVID among kids. Thanks for that question, Robert.
Oh, we've been working closely. That is a good question, Robert. We, the health department, along with the Board of Ed, have been working very closely with safe school reopening. As you may or may not know, the city of New Haven is like the only city, perhaps in the country, that did extensive inspections of the schools with a task force that consisted of mechanical engineers, fire marshals, the health department, sanitarians.
I remember that. You were worried about the HVAC systems because you worried about clear airflow.
Absolutely. And so we did the same thing this year. And so we made sure that we randomly selected schools, went out, conducted inspections. We revisited protocols. We provided technical webinars to the principals. We looked at our VOC reporting portals, make sure that they were up to date, and making sure that also now we are working with our morning and afternoon providers because there are a lot of external providers that are going to be entering our school system, making sure that they comply with the Executive Order 13D of the governor's office, as well as making sure that they understand the mitigation strategies.
Now, kids are going to get it. I mean, there's no question.
Teachers
are going to get it. So what are we going to do? I felt like we made a mistake at the Independent last year because it is important news to know that a school got it. But if you do every single case, it kind of makes everybody freak out, and it gives this cumulative idea that it's out of control, and that might not be the context. But
correct.
On the other hand, we don't want to be big brother saying we're not going to tell you what happened because we don't think you'll trust the information. That's a big mistake.
We're very transparent.
So the idea is that maybe once a week do we say here the classrooms? Because what happens? Like, if a kid gets it, does that class stay home for a week or two?
Situational, right? So one of the things that we have is we have clear protocols about how to report it, how to isolate and how to quarantine. And then during that investigative interview, making sure that those that are at risk, whether it's a classroom or several or one or two students, that will be determined between the contact tracing team. And then we will be closely monitoring. It's inevitable that we're going to have cases. But what we're trying to avoid,
I'm sure we'll have it today. I mean, today somebody doesn't realize they have COVID. They're going to go to school. So they'll be in a classroom where somebody has COVID.
And we want to try to avoid cluster cases is what we want to do, right? We do not want to disrupt school education. And we're very fortunate that the state also provided, we're going to be launching on the 13th of September, asymptomatic pre-screening of testing for all opt-in children. And the staff will be getting the weekly testing as well. So that testing measure, along with the other mitigation strategies, can at least assist with reducing disruption of school, because that's what we're trying to make sure. And we want to make sure that everyone is aware of how to report positive cases and making sure that we are reducing the risk as much as possible. But it is...
So teachers tested weekly, and you're also going to be testing all students?
At that opt-in, absolutely. It'll be a weekly pre-screening program that it will be going into place and into effect the 13th of September. So we encourage parents that to please enroll your children that went out with their packets, so that we can make sure that children opt in, especially obviously.
Oh, so it's an opt-in system. There'll be voluntary student testing.
Exactly. And it's important for those that are not able to, are age eligible to get vaccinated, to someone's point in the comments.
Yeah.
We know we want to make sure that our 12 and under are protected. And I think.
So what are we going to do when there's a case? You said it's going to depend on the case. You're going to have the contact tracers. But if there's a kid in a classroom that's positive or a teacher who's positive, will that class stay home for a week, 2 weeks?
And so obviously that we were following the quarantine process, right? The 10 days and then testing.
10 days.
Out. Yeah.
So for 10 days, it's just the class or is it the whole grade? Is it the whole school?
It will not be the whole grade, but it, depending on the, so again, it's situational. So I don't want to give a definitive response because it will be where the child exposure or the adult exposure was, the length of time. So there are a lot of variables that we need to take into consideration when we make those decisions. But if we ever have to make a decision to close a school or to make major decisions as closing classrooms, that will be done in collaboration with the administration and the city.
Am I right to say that we as a country have come to at least one consensus, different from before, which is that pretty much everyone agrees we need to err on the side of having kids in school?
Absolutely.
Realize there are going to be cases, got to do everything to prevent the cases, but get what we know now, which still isn't everything, it could change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But what we know now, I feel like both in New Haven and nationally, I'm noticing more. We don't have a consensus about anything else. We'll fight about anything in America right
mm-hmm.
now. But people do feel like we need to have kids in school, whatever that takes.
I agree. And it's important for us to work together on reducing the risk. If your child is sick, he or she has any symptoms, they should not be brought to school, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's options for kids to be able to learn from home. They all have access to laptops and things of that nature that the Board of Ed worked on so far.
And when there is
a
quarantine for class, they will learn remotely.
Absolutely.
Right?
And they will learn remotely because what we do know is the social impact that this has on children mentally and academically,
mm-hmm.
Especially communities of color, black and brown communities of children. We looked at some of the data and the engagement that we lacked last year with some of the kids not engaged at all with learning. It's concerning because as a country, you know, we're going to be lagging educationally.
Mm-hmm. And then, so now there's one mold, I guess, is that related? So Morris Sheridan, there was a memo this weekend that Morris Sheridan had this extreme mold that you guys found. Are they open today?
So I received a notification over the weekend. So we're out conducting inspections and investigating that matter.
But they are open. They have school today.
I believe so because I think it was a section of the school. It was in the entire school. So I think.
And I think they also checked and made sure they did some cleaning over the weekend. So
correct.
It's not going to be. But that's not really. Is that related to COVID or is it just we're thinking the airflow has to be good?
Well, you know, I think the airflow needs to be as its best optimal possibility. And mold mm-hmm. and inhaling any potential mold, we know the triggers that can affect a child and an adult. And so, so of course, our team are responding to that and making sure they work with the maintenance team and get an update. Because the safety of our children is a priority.
And our priority today.
And our staff.
To tell you that we're. Oh, and one last question about schools. This is one thing I know wasn't your decision. There's a shortage of bus drivers.
Oh, yeah.
The craziest policy I've seen is bus drivers don't have to be vaccinated. They're in a closed bus with tons of kids who aren't vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't bus drivers have to be vaccinated?
We need to advocate for that. I think that's going to be something we need to revisit because if they're involved, see, this is the gray area part because they're technically involved with supporting, you know, pre-K through 12 transportation, well, primarily K through 12 transportation. And so it's interesting that they don't fall into that category.
Yeah, why is that? Because they're subcontracted. Why doesn't the governor's
I'm not going to revisit that. That's something I can inquire.
You know, I'm just wondering because I know it's out of your bailiwick, but if I were in your position, I'd be so frustrated at that.
I can advocate.
Because I'd say, like, all these kids without vaccines are sitting in a bus with adults who are some of them come from areas with higher rates
mm-hmm.
of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't get why if you're going to drive a bus with kids. You know, I think my theory was that they were scared they were not going to have enough drivers
mm-hmm.
and forced them to.
Certain sectors are fearing that. And that's part of some of the hesitancy that we see.
And what's up with the 40 to 50% of cops who aren't vaccinated? What's that all about?
So that's a subjective number. And I think we will know once the portal goes live, we will have in the deadline of submitting, we're going to have an accurate percentage by department who are vaccinated. So I think one of the concerns and you know, one of the things we acknowledged at the press conference is that we did not have a great way to track who was vaccinated, who was not vaccinated. So that's why we created that portal.
Yeah. Well, the chief says it's 40 to 50% unvaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
What's that about?
I think that was a more subjective survey who opted in to respond to that survey. Doesn't mean
okay.
that the entire staff responded. So I think it's a good guesstimate. I call it
okay.
the guesstimate, right? And so
mm-hmm.
I think what's going to be great for the chief to know is the real percentage once we enact
gotcha.
This policy.
And we're talking about COVID. Yes, we are still in a pandemic, right?
Right.
Fair to say.
I'm sorry.
Now the woman, it's your fault. But now you'll get us out of it. Maritza Bond, health director, City of New Haven, has history called her, and Bill Dalal and the mayor and the city, to really respond to a crisis. But now we're kind of trying to figure out how to live with COVID. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
I know that I'm different. Now that I got my vaccine, I'm going to get a booster. If I'm close to people indoors, I wear the mask if it's a work setting. But I'm going out in ways I didn't. So The Independent, we stayed completely remote for a year. We went out and covered stories, mostly outside. But now I feel like if it's going to be a longer-term pandemic and we have tools we didn't have before, there's still a risk you're going to get COVID, much less risk you're going to get really sick.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel there's a higher risk that if I ride my bike on certain parts of Whaley Avenue of getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But am I fooling myself? Am I part of that trend that isn't taking this seriously enough?
You know, it is unfortunate because I feel like I think people are over COVID. They're just over it. But COVID is not over us, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And we need to sort of at least, we know the wisdom. We have gained the wisdom over the last 18 months. And we need to sort of be cognizant and pay attention to the risk that you can impose on yourself, but also others that cannot get vaccinated, right? So you have loved ones, as you mentioned, the booster doses. We know that
We saw my grandson, who's three, yesterday, and they were our pod during the first year. But now we're no longer in a pod. So we had to meet him outside at a state park, and we went to eat outdoors. So I feel like that might be one adjustment we have to make with kids, is not to be indoors with them.
Yeah, and it's just, there's several adjustments, right? And I think you mentioned even outdoor interviews. We immediately transitioned right back to outdoor interviews ourselves because we know.
It's kind of fun. You know, I love outdoors. It's really nice to eat outdoors.
Except when it gets cold.
Right, we're going to deal with that. Well, luckily you looked at the sewage. Maybe we'll be much lower when
it
gets cold.
I'm hoping.
And am I wrong that some restaurants are much safer than others? So I go into Claire's. It's wide open. She's got all these, like, heavy-duty infiltration systems. Nobody's sitting close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right that that's a lot safer than going to a crowded bar?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just want to commend some of the restaurant owners. They have taken so many different approaches in trying to make it as comfortable as possible for their customers. Because at the end of the day, we do want to support local businesses. And so there are so many local businesses like Claire's, you know, like Harvest.
And they're not going to get the paycheck protection loans again. I really don't think that's going to happen again.
I know.
That's what I mean about living with COVID. So last year, we really threw down for a year, a little more. And the federal government did something we wish they could do when it's not just a crisis, which is that kind of help. And so businesses were able to stay. The Independent got its PPP. These restaurants did. Mm-hmm. But now we're in a new phase. And are we going to kind of feel like we'll try to eat outside except when it's snowing?
I don't know. You know, it's not as comfortable as the colder it gets, and I think that's where some of my reservations and concerns come from. Increasing indoor activity.
Yeah. So let me give you a checklist, because Mercy, I'm sure you're asked 90,000 times a day what people should do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So should people eat in an indoor restaurant if they're masked?
You know, I'm not going to say no. So if people feel comfortable, the mitigation strategies are in place. You know, your mask are for eating and drinking. Mask can be off when eating and drinking, and then mask back up when you need to. You're no longer eating and drinking and getting up to use the restroom and things of that nature.
And what about, it depends which restaurant, just do your diligence?
I think for the most part, all the restaurants are in compliance, right? I think the concern that I have is when we transition from restaurant to social life, nightlife.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So right now you're feeling good about how restaurants are complying with the rules.
For the most part, I think.
Are bars, is making people show proof of vaccination.
I was bragging about them on Twitter because, you know, they just set a great example.
Yeah.
I know that they went, they literally went viral nationally across the country, but they were one of the first to sort of step up and say, listen,
and
we want to stay open.
And they have a lot of customers who are kind of Trump hate, there is no COVID, take sheep, infect them or whatever, you know, they have all those people who said, we're not going there anymore.
It was a small percentage. They're still,
I'm
around there on the weekends. They're still pretty busy. It's a small percentage of people that are really into the extremists of the right wing.
So they're just louder.
They're just louder, and they have some tactics, like the tiny little group that threatened the governor in Cheshire. I thought that was ridiculous.
That was
honestly
incredible.
I thought,
God.
You know, that was a I was actually saddened to see that.
Do you ever get threats?
No.
That's good.
Well, the only time I received a threat was when it was a non-resident trying to get a vaccine early on. They were upset because they couldn't get a New Haven resident vaccine.
And we did give a lot of non-residents vaccines.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, I'm glad you're safe. So what about bars in general? So bars doing great.
Most bars are not in compliance, and so I'm really disappointed.
What are they doing wrong?
So one of the things that we are seeing, and I'm getting videos, or I've witnessed it myself, so the last two weekends I went out, I like to do outdoor dining, and then I walk around. Most people don't know who I am. Well, some do not know who I am, or they're not paying attention, and I've witnessed people entering nightclubs and or received videos and pictures. No one's in mass compliance at all. So, like, they are, you know, lines are wrapped around blocks of neighborhoods to try to get into these nightclubs. And there are a lot of the college kids in the last 3 weeks, actually.
Well, if you're outside, you need a mask?
When you're entering and you're waiting in line to enter the nightclub, you should be ready to be masked up. And we're witnessing people going into the nightclubs without a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a concern. And so we're working through
and
that.
And Harry points out that plenty of Democrats that didn't vote for Trump are not vaccinated. I would just say the percentages are 90% versus 70%. So it's a huge difference. And the threats that are being received, physical threats, are coming from the Trumpists. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
There's no doubt about that.
You're not getting threats from people. It was Cheshire. It was not New Haven, where the governor was physically threatened, for God forbid, about saving a kid's life.
And a state representative was also threatened. And I felt really bad seeing that video and other.
And yes, it is a scientific poll. It was released yesterday.
You know, we have to make everything based on science. So what I did is I retweeted the data to show, number one, Cheshire falls into the New Haven County, which means that there are high-risk transmission, and they are actually in the red. And so I sort of reminded the community, like, are we talking about the town that's in the red?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mask? That's
so tell
crazy.
Me more about the bars. So what are you going to do? So, what else are they doing wrong besides not being ready with the mask when they go in? When
and
they're
I'm
going,
concerned about overcrowding,
are
right?
they wearing the mask? Oh, and they're going past the crowd.
So
limits.
I'm concerned about overcrowding as well as mask compliance. So we're going to be reactivating. And there's also some local concerns. We've received calls from alders in their respective wards of local corner stores not in compliance, or local restaurants, fast food chain restaurants not in compliance. You know, employees wearing their mask on their chins.
Mm-hmm.
Our masks are not beards. It's not a fad. They belong above your nose and above your mouth. So we're going to be reactivating and reconvening tomorrow. And now we're going to probably transition from education to finding individuals. And that, you know, I was optimistic, giving people the benefit of the doubt. We've done some lots mm-hmm. of warnings in the past 3 weeks, and now we're going to step it up, and we will be out with the task force and, potentially media team to mm-hmm. issue tickets, because at the end of the day, I need to make sure that the overall community is safe and that we're keeping our numbers as low as possible. And wearing a mask is not that difficult. And we know that it reduces the risk of exposure, of contracting COVID, along when you're doing proper hand hygiene and social distancing.
Now, has anyone ever gotten COVID from hand hygiene?
Not to my knowledge, right? So
it's always good to keep your hands. We've all learned that we weren't doing good enough.
Well, historically,
our hands flu and everything.
Yeah, historically, our hands carry a lot of germs, and so when we touch a lot of things, we touch our faces.
I just
touch
my face. Yeah.
And so it does pose. You know, our hands need to be clean,
mm-hmm.
and so it does pose a risk.
What about concerts and movies?
You know,
should we go to movies?
Well, you know, I'm not going to restrict. We're not restricting, right,
legal.
As a state.
Yeah.
It's all within the respective safety zone and following the proper sector rules that are for those venues. Like outdoor concerts, we know have provisions in place. Indoor concerts like the Music Hall on College Street, the Super Theater, they've put provisions in place. And so we're really happy with those provisions. Shout out to Keith at the Westville Music Hall and College Music, on College Street. They've thought this through, and the Sherbert Theater as well, leadership team. And so I do commend them for putting in safety measures to safely stay open.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I think so, too. I went to one Westville outdoor concert just before Delta came back strong. Boy, was that fun.
I know.
And it was safe. People
it was
were
really
good.
Safe, yeah.
And actually, I went to an event where I was kind of surprised. Daryl Burkeen announced for Secretary of State at this new bar restaurant at College and Temple.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was going to be out in the patio, and it wasn't. And I was impressed with people. They really lifted their mask only, maybe skewed because kind of a goody-goody crowd. I don't know. But anyway, they lifted their masks only when they ate and drank.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed with that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that's good. Yeah.
That's
good. I don't know if that's good enough.
That's an example. Yeah. That's a good example, yeah.
Okay, so Mitch Abad, Health Director, City of New Haven, Dateline New Haven, WNHH-FM. And thanks, everyone, for the questions. We'll get to some of them. But I want to ask you about the eviction moratorium. So the Supreme Court, as we knew it would, has overturned President Biden's eviction moratorium. And I don't think we need to be mad at the Supreme Court. Because I'm very sympathetic to them, because I feel like they made it clear what are the constitutional parameters of what the president can do, what the CDC can do versus Congress. And Congress did not act. So I fault Congress, both parties, really, for not making that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So away from the politics, the eviction moratorium is being lifted.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean in New Haven in terms of spread of COVID and people losing their homes?
Well, you know, there were some concerns about that. A few weeks ago, we had made an announcement about the support for avoiding eviction, and that was a press conference that was led by our another department that I do not oversee. However, you know, it could pose a risk. And, you know, you got to look at it from both sides. You know, you have some homeowners investing into properties that may own one or two. I'm not talking about the mass entities. So I think it's tough on both sides because you have people potentially losing
their homes.
Oh, we're
totally sympathetic to the landlord, the small landlords. And I look at the docket every week in the for evictions, and it is mostly the big landlords, but not only. But one issue is, so at first we're saying, you know, New Haven had all this money in Connecticut to help people not get evicted, and almost all of it was not touched. So then we say, well, it was hard to access. People didn't know. It wasn't worth it.
And
the landlords get money, but what they're saying is that not enough. It's not worth it because they're still losing tons of money if they go through it, so it's just not worth it. But I found out it's a national problem.
It is a national problem.
I think it's something, is it 87%, Maritza, that wasn't used by all governments in the country?
I don't know the exact percentage, but it's significantly high.
Yeah.
And I think, how do we get to the grassroots level of people understanding that something's available, right? And I think also, I feel that there's inconsistent policies both at the federal and state level. So when you do not have an incentive to really go back to work, because we have so many vacancies. I don't know if you, I'm literally shopping out in the community. There's like job opportunities everywhere. I have small restaurant owners saying, we do not have enough workforce, so we have to now reassess.
But they did study, and it turned out that having the unemployment insurance was not the main reason people weren't going back to work. They were worried about taking care of their kids.
It's a number of variables. So I call it the social issues that are now impacting us from COVID. Mm-hmm. So it's literally not just housing.
So you're saying if we can get more people into these open jobs, they won't be evicted. Although a lot of people have substance abuse or, you know.
And I was going to say, there's a number of variables, right? We're seeing an increase all-time high about substance abuse. We have mental health that's taking a toll on our community. We have school, daycares that are struggling to keep their doors open. We hear from our daycare providers. So there's all these social factors that, and I call them social determinants, that are literally impacting the ability for people to even remain in their homes or even return to work or keep a good health and state of mind physically and mentally. So it's not good what COVID is doing to our community.
Do you think, how soon are they going to be evicted in New Haven?
I don't have that information.
That's not your department.
I know, it's not within my purview. I wouldn't know if it was.
Okay. Boosters. So
yes.
Technically, anyone now who has an immunocompromised condition can get a booster shot, a third shot of Pfizer, correct?
As long as it's 28 days after they receive their second dose.
And you've actually set up some special slots for them.
You know, it's actually not even slots. Walk in, no appointment necessary. We actually have seen a high demand, actually.
So what about when we're a lot of us are eager for our third shots?
Yes.
And right now, Biden originally said it'll be 8 months, considering if the CDC approves. Now they said it'll probably be 6 months because it starts to wane.
Mm-hmm.
Few questions. Do you think we're going to have enough? Is it going to be like last time where people are... Joel Colley says, glad you're vaccinated, Harry. I'm glad, too. Will it be like last time where it's going to be tough to get one, or is there really going to be plenty this time and there aren't going to be
We don't have a supply concern in Connecticut. You know, I think in our country, unfortunately, we are discarding vaccines.
So do you think it won't be like last time where it's hard to get an appointment? Are you going to be able to walk in, you think, when your time comes?
We have so many different sectors offering vaccines, from Walmart to the private sector. I think that's not the issue. We may need to go into perhaps scheduling appointments again, just to sort of get a gauge of the workforce capacity that we need. But right now, supply is not a concern at this point.
And then if you got a Pfizer, do you need your next booster to be a Pfizer or
a
mix and match?
Because
at first
they
were saying it's stronger to mix and match. That was an original report, but not based on a lot of studies.
No,
just one study.
They want us to try to stay consistent with what we
received. So if you got Moderna, that's not going to be ready, right?
Not at this time. Well, no, they're both mRNA vaccines, and so hopefully they will be ready.
That has to be an emergency declaration, right? Because
yes.
Moderna is not approved.
Not currently.
But so you say don't mix and match. So if you got the J&J, also, like my daughter got J&J, and I want her to get a booster because...
It's almost there. They're almost there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, because J&J doesn't have the same strength. So now,
well, the efficacy reports are showing that they've been consistent with their percentages, even with the variants. So
oh, really? Okay.
There's some mixed reports. There's some reports now showing that it's been holding up to the variant. So I think that's actually good news. Whereas originally did have some reservations about the overall efficacy rate. It's sort of holding, some of the reports that we're reading is holding consistent with the current variant. So that's actually good news.
Okay, now I want to ask you my crazy theory.
Which one?
About boosters.
What's your theory?
Ready? This is a crazy theory. So I'm not a public health person.
Okay.
So it'd be like someone who has never run or swung a bat telling people how to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I tried this theory out at the Shabbat table on Friday night. There was a doctor there who knows
okay.
this stuff. They all told me I was totally crazy.
Why? What did you say?
Okay. So Moderna, according to all the studies so far, which are incomplete, right,
mm-hmm.
show that Moderna has much higher efficacy than Pfizer.
Well,
they're showing.
It depends what report you're reading. It's.
Have you read all? Every time they give a percentage, they say
it's the difference.
They said that against the Delta variant, they said Pfizer was in the 40s and Moderna was in the 70s and 80s.
Mm-mm.
Okay,
no,
got that wrong.
That's not accurate. So what we're seeing between the two, because they're both mRNA.
Right.
Mind you, I had Moderna.
I did too, and I feel lucky. I've never read a news story about a breakthrough that says somebody had had the Moderna. Is that just happenstance? Because there's so many more Pfizer vaccines out there?
No, I think it varies. You know what? That's actually a good question. I need to look at the breakthrough cases and see what vaccine they have.
I don't think they've studied it.
I don't think they've studied it.
We don't get that info.
We don't have it.
And also because Israel was the big case study, and that was all Pfizer. But
correct.
I feel like it's possible Moderna. That obviously, these initial studies, we can't put too much stock because
yeah.
they're not a big enough sample group.
Correct.
But if Moderna is true, here was my theory. Do you remember that through the aughts, if you had an Apple Mac computer,
mm-hmm.
you almost never got a virus from a hacker compared
compared
to
like the gateway in the Dell. Yeah.
Any desktop. I mean, a PC.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason was, as I understood it, because I don't think it's that true anymore. There were so many more PCs out there that hackers thought it wasn't worth their time to mess with Apple, which also had better protections.
At the time.
Right. Now it's not as true because there's so many more people have it and they figured it out. So my theory was that viruses of all kinds, including biological, mutate to try to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And overcome through natural selection.
Oh!
Right.
I don't know.
The ones that survive are the ones that have... found a way to get past the defenses, that there was so much more Pfizer out there that the Delta variant developed in India and developed around the Pfizer vaccine, which is not the same thing as the Moderna vaccine.
Mm. I don't know. I would disagree. So because we
yeah,
launched,
I told it was totally crazy. That's
it
not
is
the way
definitely.
Vaccines work.
It's totally
so
a theory. Well, it's definitely a good theory, though. But, you know, it's definitely not true because we launched Moderna first. Out of the health department.
And I felt we were so lucky, yeah.
Yeah, so I think consistently we're seeing that now some of the studies that I've been reading in the last 2 weeks is that actually Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer are almost within the same range.
Okay.
And so so that's actually not a true theory, but I liked it. It was a good one to analyze.
Okay, well, we'll get back to facts now. Okay, in terms of how we're going to live with COVID.
Yeah.
So we originally hoped we'd get herd immunity. Mm-hmm. And this guy, you read in the Wall Street Journal, he's part of like the right wing, but smart. He's from John Hopkins, Dr. I call him Malarkey, but it's like Markey, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
But he's very influential, most read on this. He said we were already going to be at herd immunity in April, because when you count the people who already got the virus and the people who got vaccines, it's going to be up 80%. But now we know that even if you got the virus, it's not good enough.
No, because that also means, right?
So it wasn't a stupid thing he said.
Yeah.
Because we have to look at reality and catch up with it and admit we don't know everything.
Mm-hmm. We sure don't. It continues to evolve, right?
Right. So what's going to happen? Are we going to be living with COVID forever? Does it get to a point, and this is another theory I thought I read, that at some point, like with colds, yes, they evolve every year, a flu. Yes, you have to tweak a vaccine. But they stop getting stronger and stronger the way mm-hmm. Delta is so much stronger. Mm-hmm. And maybe there'll be something. So it could be something after Delta that's going to overpower and we'll need a fourth booster.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you think that it'll settle down at some point and we're going to just be able to, it'll be like a common cold?
So this is the reality. The reality is that, like you mentioned, the virus continues to try to remain strong and continues to try to fight against the vaccine. And the concerns that I see is what's happening on a global level. At the global level, we have many countries that do not have the infrastructure as we have, that do not have the percentages of individuals vaccinated. And so the virus are mutating. You know, we have so many different mutations at this point. Look what's happening in South America. We have Lambda that has literally become the dominant variant in that country.
How do our vaccines do against Lambda?
And Lambda is really resistant, but they also have a lower percentage of vaccinated folks. So again, right now the World Health Organization is not classifying them a major concern, but I am keeping an eye on it.
Well, it's going to come if it's stronger, right? Everything comes because there's always one person who went somewhere else and caught it. Right?
Delta was in India. We were not... I think here, and I wasn't necessarily too concerned at the time. It wasn't a concern for us yet. And the problem is that we're such an international country. We have people transit all the time.
Well, the world is globally connected.
Correct.
So it's one thing we learn that anytime it's not going to be, SARS was contained.
Correct. And it was
Ebola was contained.
But response.
Is it no longer possible to contain something like a coronavirus,
you know,
mutation, because there'll be one person who gets it, will bring it unknowingly back to Washington State or Kentucky or Connecticut or New Rochelle, and then that's it.
I think for me and some of, you know, I have phenomenal people on my board, and one that is constantly debating this issue along with me, is that until we have a global response, we're going to continue to see variants, and we're going to have to continue to be concerned if it's going to enter our country because of the international worldwide connection that we have.
So how should people be thinking about COVID? Are we going to be every few months going back to some lockdowns, working remotely, not going into a restaurant, not going to a concert, and then back opening up for a few months? Are we going to be wearing masks forever? I mean, how are we thinking about
this? Our hopes is not that we are living in this world that we have to constantly be concerned about closure and lockdowns. I think we're sort of past that. No one wants to lock down because we sort of are 18 months later knowing some of the ways that we can reduce it.
There's a limit time how much you could be operating on freak out emergency.
Seriously.
Right?
I mean, you know.
How I kind of look at it.
It's
we did our year like that. Now we have to figure out how to go longer term.
Absolutely.
But how longer term?
And that's the unknown, right? And I think pushing and getting as many people vaccinated is so critical. Because that we know what we know, and even when we look at history, the more people that are vaccinated across our country and our cities.
So if we're 85% vaccinated, does that mean the next
We would definitely
variant.
Be in the threshold that we want to be with community, herd immunity within our Connecticut community. But we know that this disease crosses all borders, doesn't care about, you know, political parties or social status. So we have to work. You know, the federal government's going to have to work with some of these states that are refusing. I mean, we had the governor in Texas trying to stop vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
We had the governor in Florida trying to threaten, if you do mask mandates, threaten disbursement of funds. So we really got to work at the federal level on addressing a lot of these governors in states that are opposing the science and the data to provide the protection that
but
the
we know
community
what that's
need.
About, right?
It's political. It's
right. DeSantis and Abbott aren't nuts. They just want to win primaries. And there's this QAnon faction believing
when there are a lot of issues
people
around.
People making money peddling false ideas on the internet. So now to win their primaries, they're doing that. That's another case. So, Mr. Brown, we're not going to ask you to solve our political problems in New Haven. All we're going to ask you to do is to continue doing a great job working night and day to try to help us navigate our way through COVID. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
New Haven's done a good job.
Yes, we
really
have. We're rocking it.
And we're going to continue doing a good job.
Yes, thank you.
We're in
thank
it
you
together.
For the invitation, like always.
I love when you come in and update us. Thank you very much, Marissa Bond, Health Director, City of New Haven. Thank you, Harry Droz, the station manager who makes it all happen against so many on so many platforms and realms that we might have to move to, depending on the new normal. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing
nice.
I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free.
Aw, that's a
from
beautiful
the
way to end.
CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night on WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.